Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, folks. It's now or never. And, you know, as I look towards D.C., as I look towards China, Beijing, as I leave Moscow, what makes you think that it's ever going to get better? The only way things are going to get better is if you actually get involved and demand it, because it is the power of the people in this Republican form of government. We have to demand. If we allow the people to demand a democracy, they will destroy our republic. We have to demand our Republican form of government and go back to representation. But the beautiful thing is, the law of the land requires every citizen and every public servant to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. Therefore, my friends, we actually have to start having the honest conversation of, what does it take for a citizen to lose their citizenship? Are you entitled to be able to have an insurrection against the Constitution and still be a citizen? Heck no. We need to restore the Tory Acts. That's exactly what the Tory Acts was all about. If you didn't support the Constitution didn't exist at that point, but that was the paradigm. If you supported something other than what we were deciding as ourselves, as our governing document, then you're gone. And we got rid of, and we expelled these folks. These people have no business being in America. It's like allowing the enemy to live within us. I mean, even the Bible tells us that it is just, it's idiocracy, it's imbecilic to allow the enemy to be within your home. So we have to start having the adult conversation, because people really think that they're entitled to be able to come here and destroy us. No, if you're an enemy, you're not welcome here. You can't be here. You want to be an enemy? Then you go exist somewhere else and you make it happen there. But you can't make it happen here, because the rule of law exists and we're protected. You know, I mean, I see these people saying that, you know, our government has gone adrift, and it can't. If we're doing what we're supposed to be doing as citizens and as patriots, a patriot supports the Constitution, then these folks would be gone. It's just about you. You have to get involved and you have to demand the measures of citizenship be held. That we have these thresholds. We have standards. You can't be a citizen, then you're not a citizen anymore. If you refuse to be a citizen, then that's fine. You can't vote. You can't participate. You're done. And if you want to continue in your insurrection, we will just ship you out. We have that power. Bill Gates should lose everything and be expelled. All of these billionaires that are here just trying to destroy this constitutional republic, they have no business being here, and they have no right to their property, just like the Tories. The Tories lost everything. We have the rule of law on our sides. They're either legally obligated to do what they're going to do as a citizen in this nation, or start over in another nation and do it there. Do what you want to do there. It's pretty simple. But I'm a kind of a black and white guy, ain't I, Paul? Now that we have Paul with us, I just wanted to let everybody know that I could go into the obligatories, and Paul has no idea when I'm going to switch to him. But, I mean, I'm a pretty black and white guy, right?
Yeah, you're pretty right or wrong, black or white. You're right.
So there's no gray here, folks. The letter of the law is the letter of the law. Every state in the union has the power to compel every citizen to take up arms to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. I want you to understand what that means. We have the responsibility to take up arms to actually go after Bill Gates or anybody that wants to actually destroy our Constitution. That is the law. That is what this nation is based upon. And they're trying to pervert it. And slowly they've become really successful and they're getting close. But the problem is that the rule of the law still exists and the letter of the law still exists. And we have the law on our side still until the door finally shuts when the states have fully abdicated their role and their authority as the parties of the compact. When that happens, then it's done. Because they may have done a lot of bad things already, but they haven't done the final blow. They haven't allowed the federal government and the Constitution to be fully set aside. But every legislator in the United States, in the state's legislation or the state legislatures, they all need to understand that the day is coming quickly when they will have to take that stand and say, no federal government, no president, no whomever. That is our compact. You have no authority to do what you are asserting. Only we can delegate that authority, and we have not, and we will not. It's that simple. God gave us everything we need to stop all of this. And I mean, I say that all the time, Paul?
Yeah. In fact, I find myself saying it. So you're right.
Yes. Awesome. So, okay. So we're back into the Massachusetts debates. I'm not going through the obligatory because I want to cover as much as we can. And I know we're getting into some weeds, folks. And we're highlighting things that if you would have read the ratification debates, you would have skipped over these things. Really. Now we're going to be getting into some of the obvious stuff, but what I want to show you that when you really use a discerning eye, when you're reading the ratification debates, there are things that you read that you could have easily skimmed over and go, okay, that wasn't that relevant. When actually there was some relevance there that you missed. Anyhow.
Well, there's something else, GR, and that's the way these people spoke. It's each of these paragraphs is a mouthful. Sometimes they don't even have commas. And so if you don't know what you're looking for, not only can you possibly miss it, it can be right in front of your face. And frankly, you know, you might doze off. You might just not understand what they're saying. You've read a lot of this stuff. It helps to have your insight because in many cases, you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, and you know, what also helps is, you know, understanding what the heck's going on and then, you know, using that as your basis, kind of, you know, like everything that we're going through, you can create a filter for. Like you can filter for Second Amendment, guns, militia, and those types of things, and you can find those things. But then there's some of these other little things like the electors, the electoral college. I mean, there's so many things that we're ignorant on that are clearly within the Constitution. But I'm going, oh, hold on here. You know, this is kind of important. So that's why I kind of highlight these things with notes or what have you. But when it comes down to the ratification debates, and I want you to understand, because a Republican form of government is based on the rule of law and that the Constitution is the foundation of our laws, our entire legal system. And if you understand contract law, even though at the time the Constitution was being ratified, contract law had not fully evolved into this mature law that it is today. But even back then, the fundamental tenets, because Madison refers to this all the time, that it is the nature of compacts and constitutions, that as these things were decided and how they defined them, they actually become the terms and definitions of the law itself. And so we've matured to this point to where we embrace that, where the federal government uses that in their contracts against their contractors. And I'm telling you what, they exploit it to the T. And what's keeping the states from standing up and saying, hey, we have the terms and definitions of this compact, and we're going to hold you accountable? It's that easy. And that's why this is all important. Mm-hmm. That's why this is all important. So, any saved rounds on what we were reading or what we kind of covered last? Because the last thing we kind of gone over, I mean, we can go over it again if you want, because we went to, you know, we ended the show while we were talking about it. But anyway, anything?
This was welfare, correct?
Yeah. So actually, no, this was the note. So the note was, okay, I'll read it. We now come, sir, to the consideration of the powers with which the government shall be clothed. The introduction to this Constitution in these words, we the people, etc. The language of the Confederation is we the states, etc. The latter is a mere federal government of states. Those, therefore, that assemble under it have no power to make laws to apply to the individuals of the states confederated. And the attempts to make laws for collective societies necessarily leave a discretion to comply with them or not. In no instance has there been so frequent deviation from the first principles as in the neglected or refusal to comply to the requisitions of the general governments for the collections of money. So he was talking about the failings of the Federation, but it's interesting how he talked about, you know, the latter is a mere federal government, but he had little F, not capital F. Mm-hmm. In other words, federal being more, the appropriate word was general government, because that's what Madison used the most. Because then it was understood as, because when people hear federal, they think federation and federalism. Mm-hmm. In this context, it's actually a confederation, because he actually says this. The latter is a mere federal states of a government of states. Those, therefore, that assemble under it have no power to make laws and apply to the individual states confederated. Mm-hmm. And so he's identifying that the states are confederated. They're not a federation. And so, you know, the way they, you know, looked at things was not, you know, we've had a lot of political science and a lot of theory, and a lot of, you know, people have even perverted what all of these things mean. And we've slid ourselves away from this confederation. We've gone into federalism, general government and general powers. And I'm just going, you know, we've gotten here because of pretty nefarious people have, you know, misrepresented everything and gotten people to believe their theories instead of actually teaching them the foundation of the law itself. So anyway,
well, here's something else that's happened. When you talk about, you use the words federation and then confederation, we may have listeners who will hear the term confederate as in southern states. And so maybe to avoid that confusion, would you mind just kind of giving us a picture of what's meant by federation, what's meant by confederation?
Well, sure. So let's be clear. Either confederation and federation has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with a governing body. A confederation is a body of states that join together into a union, into a republic. So technically, the word that's not being exercised here is a republic. So when you have all of these sovereign independent states and they say, you know what, we need to create a union. When they create that union, they create what they call a republic, where this now this is, are they forming a national government? So what they end up forming determines what you really call it. But most people have just created a national government, but it's not appropriate because that's not what they did. They didn't create a national government. They created a general government. And so let's examine this. And I get into this in one of my articles that you've already read that they haven't. And so in creating this republic, the way you determine whether a federation is being created or a confederation is being maintained is based on the amount of powers delegated to the general government, because both a federation and a confederation creates a general government. In other words, a federal government. And that federal government's powers determine whether it is a federation or whether it is a confederation. Now, a federation is where the body of the general government has been delegated most powers over all things, and technically the states become an administrative function of the federal government. In other words, the states, you know, become subordinate to that federal government, where the federal government can dictate anything and everything they want to them. And
now, that's a federation or a confederation?
That is a federation. A confederation is where the states only delegate very limited powers, like national security, you know, external interfacing for trade and these types of things, and that's it. In other words, they have no domestic control. They can't dictate anything within a state or commerce within the states. Because when you look at the powers that have been delegated to the general government under our U.S. Constitution, it clearly protects and maintains the Confederation. Okay. Because it does not have the authority to dictate commerce within a state. It can only regulate commerce among the states, not within the states. And so when you look at those powers delegated, our general government, what people call the federal government, is very defined and very limited to very external objects. Objects of national security, foreign policy, very limited on treaties and those types of things. And it's very specified. In other words, if it is not specified, they can't do it. They have to come to the states and say, because the states are the parties to it, they have to go to the states and say, you know, they're creating this global government and we'd like to become a part of it. And the only way that we can do that is via a treaty, but we don't have the authority in the Constitution to create a treaty with a polity government. I mean, they have the ability with treaties. Currently, they have the authority to declare and end wars with treaties. They have the ability to create commerce agreements, you know, trade agreements with treaties and such. And they can share, or they can obtain land through treaties, because they have the ability to obtain territories, and they can dispose of territories by, you know, but the federal government's charge and responsibility is to protect the sovereignty of the states and to grow the United States into, you know, more and more states. So every territory, they do not have the authority to maintain territories. Their responsibility is to transition all territories to become a state, because they are limited based on the enumerated property in the Constitution to only have the constitutional power to possess this property for this purpose, this purpose, this purpose, and this. And territories, if you notice where territories are, territories is added underneath the responsibility of admitting states. It's not a power. Powers are listed in Article 1, Section 8. Article 4 are some of the responsibilities that the federal government has in serving the union. And so I hate to get into professorial types of lectures or what have you, but you know, it's when you really start looking at what the Constitution has, it's really easy and clear to see that we're actually a confederation of states that have all the power and have only delegated very limited and defined powers to this general government, or what we call the federal government. And so anything that the federal government is doing, even if the states are letting them do it, doesn't make it legitimate.
Right.
Right. The only way the federal government can do something legitimately, like creating debt or passing a treaty, I mean, they can sign a treaty, they can enter into that debt. And if they do that and the states don't step in, it doesn't make the debt or the treaty legitimate. The only mechanism that can make that thing legitimate is an Article 5 convention, not a convention, an Article 5 amendment. In other words, the states have to delegate that power. If not, the federal government is risking, you know, their own, you know, I'll just say careers and so forth, because we can hang these people if they start doing treasonous stuff and insurrections and so forth. And folks, they've been doing that for the past century or more. So they all stand in jeopardy, which is why they have gotten many of the state governments and politicians and everybody else, you know, co-opted, and they're using coercion to say, hey, either you go along or, you know, you're going down with us.
Right.
And that's what corruption does. And that's what the devil does. The devil gets everybody compromised, and they'll expose you and they'll get rid of you. And it doesn't matter how right you are. You know, the devil, you know, the devil knows that, you know, he can use shame. You know, it's when they've, so I'm going to actually do a special episode, and you know, I'm glad we have this conversation. I'm going to actually do a special episode that's going to talk about, you know, how evil Satan is. And when Satan has full power, he will actually show, you know, how merciless and how evil he really is. In other words, people don't understand. These people that are doing his deeds that think, oh, well, you know, love is love and homosexual marriage is okay. And so I think it's good that the government is doing this, and we're going to support government overreach and this federal tyranny of mandating homosexual marriage, because I think I like it. I think that people should be able to do that. I'm not a homosexual. I'm not engaged in that. But I just think that we ought to allow people to do that, and I want government to do that. Well, what they're doing is they're getting in league with him. And so down the road, as we allow to give the devil more and more room, the point in time when he seizes full control, that's when the purging begins. And those of you who aren't willing to take the tests of loyalty, because Satan will actually challenge everybody. Because the problem is, folks, there's way too many people. He doesn't need you. Satan does not, just like the communist governments do not need China and India and all of these heavily populated states. The problem they have is they have too many. It's okay if they go into war and they kill a bunch of people. They don't care. They can be
They feel they have too many people.
Absolutely. Right? The amount of people they have is a problem. They've got to get rid of them. And this is the globalist agenda, period. I mean, go read the Georgia Guidestones. They want to kill billions of people. So when they get down to the final list of people that they're going to keep, the only people that are going to be left are going to be the true hardcore loyalists, those people that are willing to kill grandma, those people that are willing to, you know, commit, you know, debauchery and sexual acts that, you know, will just, you have to be willing to compromise yourself all the way to where he possesses you. Because he's all, little by little, that's how the devil works. You know, with this little sin here, this, and then he gets you to a point to where you commit such atrocity that you feel that there's no way back. And you'll do anything and everything you can to survive, because bottom line, You're going to, people, when he seizes control, people are going to be faced with this decision of either I'm going to be killed because I'm not necessary anymore, or I have to be willing to sell out all my loved ones and everybody else. And Satan doesn't care, and he's going to exploit every person, everybody. And that's how the ranks will be trimmed down to the true loyalists, his legion. But God is in charge. And so there's, you know, we're going to have to suffer. We're going into a break now. We haven't even covered the ratification debates. But anyway, so I apologize for digressing. But this is something I need to cover, and I need to do this in a scientific way and so forth. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to do this for a Feedback Friday. But we'll be right back, folks, right after this promo, and we'll be diving into the Massachusetts debates. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after this. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. All right, Paul. So sorry about that. Time just flies by, right? So any saved rounds on what we just went through? Are we ready to go on to the next?
Yeah, let's go on.
Okay.
I wanted that question answered. I thought it was important.
Okay, which is fine. So the next issue is about commerce, and it's Mr. Davies that brings it up, and it's just a little bit further down here. It's on page...
It's on page 42.
43, 42, yeah, okay.
And I think that's Mr. Dawes, okay? Anyway.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So, from the angle, okay. it looked like Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S. But I think Davies is down in North Carolina. There's a Dawes and Davies. Yes. Go ahead.
Right. Here we go. As to commerce, it is well known that the different states now pursue different systems of duties in regard to each other. By this, and for want of general laws of prohibition through the Union, we have not secured even our own domestic traffic that passes from state to state. This is contrary to the policy of every nation on earth. Some nations have no other commerce. The great and nourishing empire of China has but little commerce beyond her own territories, and no country is better circumstanced than we for an exclusive traffic from state to state. Yet even in this, we are rivaled by foreigners, by those foreigners to whom we are the least indebted. A vessel from Roseway or Halifax finds its hearty a welcome with its fish and whalebone at the southern ports as though it was built, navigated, and freighted from Salem or Boston. And this must be the case until we have laws comprehending and embracing alike all the states in the Union.
Okay, so this right here explains the role of regulating commerce among the states to ensure that the states cannot play economic warfare and that they pose for themselves the advantage against foreign states. Does this make sense?
So this is among the states, not between the states.
But so among means between states, not within states. In other words, the federal government has no authority to dictate what you do within the states. Clearly, by creating this union and by creating this, I'll just say this responsibility to the federal government to basically protect the commerce of the states amongst themselves. The priority is to be given to the states. So in other words, when the states start making things, you know, like Massachusetts here in this case with fish and whale bone meal or what have you, then the importation, the taxes are to be applied to the foreign commodity. Currently, the way the Confederation is, they had this similar kind of law, but each state was creating its own treaties, giving itself its own advantages. Now with the federal government, the federal government's duty and responsibility is for protecting the state's commerce against foreign interest. Folks, today our federal government is actually selling us downriver, giving advantages to energy companies outside the United States and shutting us down. They are violating the essence of the Commerce Clause, that they have no ability to tell a state whether it can pull oil out of itself or not. Those are state resources. The federal government does not own and possess the mineral rights and the property rights of all things dwelling under our feet. The states may have that, but that's not declared and delegated to them. So in essence, all mineral rights and property rights, regardless of what they have done by statute, is not constitutional until it is directly tied to a constitutional delegated power. It is the color of law. In other words, they contrived it, and now they're enforcing something they have no authority to enforce, because the only authority that they can enforce are those powers delegated.
Correct.
Okay. So I obviously get a little passionate. I obviously go on and on and on because, you know, I sometimes I know people are getting it, but, you know, until people start repeating it, and until we actually, and actually, I'll say this, I have been hearing things coming from conservative entertainers that are almost kind of alluding to, wow, you know, it sounds like they're listening to my show. And so, anyway, so moving on, unless you got anything else to cover on this, because this really does put a good spotlight on the whole purpose of regulating commerce among the states and why the federal government has the sole authority of constraining foreign imports into America. Okay. All right. So the next one gets into what we call the convention, right? Or, and I believe this is all about amendments and so forth regarding this convention in nine states and so forth. And so go ahead.
Is that General Thompson?
I'm looking at the word convention. Yes, 45. General Thompson, yes.
All right, General Thompson, convention. Mr. President, I totally abhor this paragraph. Massachusetts has ever been a leading state. Now let her give good advice to her sister states. Suppose nine states adopt this constitution. Who shall touch the other four? Some crowd, force them. I say, draw them. We love liberty. Britain never tried to enslave us until she told us we had too much liberty. The Confederation wants amendments. Shall we not amend? The convention were sent on to Philadelphia to amend this confederation. But they made a new creature, and the very setting out of it is unconstitutional. In the convention, Pennsylvania had more members than all in New England, and two of our delegates only were persuaded to sign the Constitution. Massachusetts once shut up the harbors against the British. There, I confess, I was taken in. Don't let us be in a hurry again. Let us wait to see what our sister states will do. What shall we suffer if we adjourn the consideration of it for 5 or 6 months? It is better to do this than adopt it so hastily. Take care we don't disunite the states. By uniting we stand, by dividing we fall.
Interesting.
Jared, this guy, was this guy an anti-federalist?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, so this is one of the debates where you actually got comments from all sides. And so Mr. Kingsley went on, and so if you read the next one, and this is where you really need to start doing the due diligence to follow up what, you know, how the Federalists responded to the Anti-Federalist claims. So it's probably in here where we start looking at some of the differences, but the question is this. He's making an assertion that is, you know, it's not supported, but I even say that I believe that they already failed in trying to stop the ratification convention from occurring because, you know, clearly he was trying to allude to the fact that what they did was outside their commission, but that's his opinion. They already agreed in the very beginning, and I pointed out that they agreed with Congress's, and let me go all the way back up to the very top because it's I highlight it and I want to read it because it's that important. Agreeably to the recommendation of Congress were ordered to be read. In other words, Congress recommended and they agreeably agreed. In other words, they brought it before them and they said, are we going to look and debate this Constitution for ratification? And they said yes. So in other words, that didn't mean that anti-federalists still didn't have the sour grapes Fox paradigm to, oh, you know, I still have a problem with this. And they're going to try to make political hay out of this as often as they possibly can. And so you find that even in the Virginia ratification debates, it gets brought up. And as a matter of fact, in the Virginia ratification debates, when you read after Henry brings it up or after somebody else brings it up, like Mr. Clay, it goes right back. Mr. Pendleton comes back and fires back saying, you know, I can't believe we've already settled this argument that they were within their commission. And you keep bringing it up. You know, at what point are you going to stop wasting our time? Kind of thing.
Right.
Right. Okay. So, and if you go through, I think, Mr. Kingsley's response, I'm sure you'll probably find that, because they talk about the Confederation and so forth, and I just didn't spend the time, but I do want to, and I think I've alluded to this yesterday, that this weekend I'm going to kind of go through and read some of these things that go beyond, you know, when these guys bring up the convention to see if somebody basically backhanded them or shut them up and said, look, you know, we already debated this and we, the voice of the people, disagree with your position that they exceeded their commission. Because that happened in Virginia. And I know for a fact that, like I said, Pauline Mayer actually provided the details that the Anti-Federalists tried to stop the ratification debates from even convening. They basically challenged these things and they forced it to become a voted issue in most all of the states where the Constitution was heavily debated. So in the six or seven states, you know, and this is what the John Birch Society is basically saying, that it was a runaway convention because the Anti-Federalists were saying that. So in other words, the John Birch Society is resurrecting the age-old argument. And who are the Federalists to actually say no? Because nobody's challenging what the Anti-Federalists are saying, that it was a runaway convention. And actually, in their day and time, the Anti-Federalists lost the argument because they all voted and they disagreed with the Anti-Federalists and they proceeded forward with the ratification debates. Now, I'm not sure if anybody knows this, but there's a guy by the name of Robert Brown that has actually offered $10,000 to anybody who can prove that it was not a runaway convention. And as far as I'm concerned, all you need to do, and I should reach out to Pauline Mayer because she academically has done this, she could easily prove to Ron Brown with the research that she's done that the states had already settled that problem and boom, 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 and give them the data and say, okay, give me my $10,000. Because what ends up happening is when you make an assertion like that, and most people don't even know where to get the data from. They don't know how to do that. Well, if you go to the University of Wisconsin, you'll find all the data you need. And I think that's where Pauline Mayer found all of that, because if you have never read her book regarding Madison's search, or it's about the Bill of Rights. Just look up Pauline Mayer in a book that she wrote regarding the Bill of Rights and Madison's pursuit for the Bill of Rights, something like that. It's a really good book.
How do you spell her last name?
M-A-I-E-R. Anyway, okay, so Judge Sumner, the next day, because that was General Thompson made that remark, and it was towards the end, and then Mr. Kingsley kind of basically made a response. Now, I'm not sure if Kingsley was a Federalist or not. You know, sometimes the Anti-Federalists, you know, had lined up and they went, and then the Anti-Federalists, so it was, you know, FIFO, right? Everything was FIFO. What is FIFO? First in, first out. So when people got up to, you know, to debate an issue, they would have to stand up and get in line and they would be the next one up. And that's why you would see, you know, a few Anti-Federalists get up in response to the Federalists. And so when the Anti-Federalists are talking, then a few Federalists would get up, and John Marshall, Madison, Nicholas, you know, so you'd have to know how these people were getting up to basically provide testimony or addressing the delegates in the convention. And so, anyway, delegated powers. So we're going to move down to January 22nd, and this is on page 46 underneath Judge Sumner.
I see it. Judge Sumner, delegated powers. The powers proposed to be delegated in this section are very important, as they will, in effect, place the purse strings of the citizens in the hands of Congress for certain purposes. In order to know whether such purposes, powers are necessary, we ought, sir, to inquire what the design of uniting under one government is. It is that the national dignity may be supported, its safety preserved, and necessary debts paid. Is it not necessary, then, to afford the means by which alone these objects can be attained? Much better, it appears to me, would it be for the states not to unite under one government, which will be attended with some expense, than to unite and at the same time withhold the powers necessary to accomplish the design of the union. Gentlemen say the power to raise money may be abused. I grant it. And the same may be said of any other delegated power. Our general court have the same power. But did they ever dare abuse it? Instead of voting themselves
six shillings, and
okay,
because thanks, if you notice, if you keep going to the right, you see the pound, 12 okay. pounds a day, right?
So 6 shillings, 8 D's, they might vote themselves 12 pounds a day, but there never was a complaint of them voting themselves more than what was reasonable. If they should make an undue use of their power, they know a loss of confidence in the people would be the consequence, and they would not be reelected, and this is one security in the hands of the people.
And so the point is that, you know, we slowly transition, because, again, he started off with delegated powers. If they didn't have, so, yeah, they had delegated powers, but they also had the control of compensating themselves. So the first thing that, you know, would tip people off is, hey, they're overcompensating themselves, and people would step in and say, hey, that, and that's one of the reasons why there was an amendment that they couldn't necessarily change their compensation until after the next election. So in other words, if they granted themselves a pay raise, the pay raise was not to take effect. That actually became the amendment of 1992, which was the second mm-hmm. amendment in the 12 amendments of the Bill of Rights. There were 12 amendments. That amendment was a part of that to make sure that they couldn't, you know, grant themselves immediate pay raises. Well, anyway, so back to this. You know, what he's really talking about is, you know, how delegated the powers are. Well, we should be holding them to the delegated powers, but instead we've been fixated on their pay salary, and we've adopted the concept that, you know, hey, you know, we don't understand delegated powers, so we believe you have these general powers, so give us health care. You know, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. we all have pets, so we want free veterinary care for our pets. We want, you know, government-provided dental benefits. We want government to take care of everything. Can you come to the bathroom and wipe my behind, you know, because I just can't do it myself anymore? I mean, this is how ridiculous we've gotten in asking government to take care of us when they have delegated powers. Anything that's not delegated, they have no authority to do. And if they're doing it, it is the color of law. So anyway, see, I repeat myself, right? It all kind of comes back around to the same things. And so we see that there's a Mr. Gore here, and we jump down the Honorable Phillips of Boston. And this is an observation regarding welfare, and it's a nice, long, lengthy observation, but it's one worth reading, this, which is why I've highlighted it. So go ahead.
Okay. Do we have time before the break?
We got 8 minutes. Yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah. We can do that. Okay. So this is the Honorable Mr. Phillips of Boston, welfare. I rise to make a few observations on this section, as it contains powers absolutely necessary. If social government did not exist, there would be an end of individual government. Therefore, our very being depends on social government. On this article is founded the main pillar of the building. Take away this pillar, and where is your government? Therefore, I conceive in this view of the case, this power is absolutely necessary. There seems to be a suspicion that this power will be abused. But is not all delegation of power equally dangerous? If we have a castle, shall we delay to put a commander into it for fear he will turn his artillery against us? My concern is for the majesty of the people. If there's no virtue among them, what will the Congress do? If they had the meekness of Moses, the patience of Job, and the wisdom of Solomon, and the people were determined to be slaves, sir, could the Congress prevent them? If they set heaven at defiance, no arm of flesh can save them. Sir, I shall have nothing to do in this government, but we see the situation we're in. We're verging towards destruction, and everyone must be sensible of it. I suppose the New England states have a treasure offered to them better than the mines of Peru, and it cannot be to the disadvantage of the southern states. Great Britain and France come here with their vessels, instead of our carrying our produce to those countries in American vessels navigated by our citizens. When I consider the extensive seacoast there is to this state alone, so well calculated for commerce, viewing matters in this light, I would rather sink all this continent owes me than this power should be withheld from Congress. Mention is made that Congress ought to be restricted of the power to keep an army except in time of war. I apprehend that great mischief would ensue from such a restriction. Let us take means to prevent war by granting to Congress the power of raising an army. If a declaration of war is made against this country and the enemy's army is coming against us, before Congress could collect the means to withstand this enemy, they would penetrate into the bowels of our country, and every thing dear to us would be gone in a moment. The honorable gentleman from Top Shin has made use of the expression, quote, "Oh, my country," end quote, from an apprehension that the Constitution should be adopted. I will cry out, "Oh, my country," if it is not adopted. I see nothing but destruction and inevitable ruin if it is not. The more I pursue and study this article, the more convinced I am of the necessity of such a power being vested in Congress. The more I hear said against it, the more I am confirmed in my sentiments of its expediency, for it is like the pure metal. The more you rub it, the brighter it shines. It is the concern I hear the honorable gentleman from Top Shin make use of language against the gentleman of the law. Sir, I look on this order of men to be essential to the liberties and rights of the people, and whoever speaks against them is speaking against the ordinance of heaven. Mr. President, I hope every gentleman will offer his sentiments candidly on this momentous affair, but that he will examine for himself and consider that he has not only the good of this Commonwealth under consideration, but the welfare of the United States.
Yes, and so here's another example of where they use the same retort. And you're going to notice that it's going to actually come up a couple of times because, you know, somebody will say, hey, you know, they have this power and that power can be corrupted. And then the retort is, well, yeah, any power can be corrupted. Any power can be violated. Does that mean that we shouldn't have a government because it can be corrupted? I think in this case, he talks about, you know, creating a castle, but not having a general to actually start firing the artillery to wage the war because the general could become corrupted.
Right.
And so they keep on, you know, as the anti-federalists keep on coming up with these. In Massachusetts, they had, I think, a very brilliant way of proving and using that same logic right back at them and going, well, you know, we already have this, and that means it can be corrupted already. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's exposing, you know, because I used to think that the anti-federalists really had, you know, this honorable position, but I realized that the major players in the anti-federalist movement were really those people who were protecting their little fiefdoms of power that they didn't want. And when you start looking at the advantages of the union and getting the states to actually comply and do the things that they refused to do under the Articles of Confederation, because even though they had the same laws that they couldn't make these treaties, only that the Continental Congress could make the treaties regarding trade, every state was violating it. It's the same thing with the currency and everything else. So in other words, as he stated here, the Articles of Confederation and the Confederation itself was destined to, you know, it was at the precipice of failure. And anybody that wasn't recognizing that was literally in the state of denial. So we've got about a minute and a half. Anything you want to add before we say goodbye to, you know, this week's ratification debates and dive into it next week?
Well, GR, time flies when you're having fun. I just didn't realize the time passed by so quickly. So, again, I appreciate it. I'm learning a lot, and I hope that we're able to get the questions answered for the listeners as well.
Yeah, and so one of the things you should be learning from this, you know, as you realize that it doesn't take much time to lose time. In other words, you start talking about something, it could, you know, something that you could maybe say as concise and as short as possible. And that's my weakness. That's my problem, because I could be more concise. I need to learn to be more concise so we can be, you know, compacting more. But bottom line is, some of this stuff does require examining and looking and taking different approaches at it so that people can understand what it is that we're talking about. So,
the other thing, GR, is you've been at this for a long time, a lot longer than I have. I'm just now scratching the surface. So again, thanks for what you do.
No, well, thank you for coming on, because I think I believe that the listeners appreciate the fact of having one of the dialogues, especially when it comes to reading things like this. It really helps, you know, when, you know, we take turns, or actually, you know, you're reading it really does help, because then it's a matter of me. Because as you read it, you get more out of it. If I read it, you may not come up with the same question or what have you. But anyway, thank you so much for being here, Paul. We've got the outgoing music. And so at this point, folks, he can't really hear because the music is just, and then everything kind of just fades for him on his end. Anyway, as we go through the ratification debates, we will prove to you the terms and definitions of that document. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.